Hi folks, welcome to the Money 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 podcast. I'm Surabhi Upadhyay and we come to you every week with some very interesting conversations to help you get your personal finances in order and get smart with your money. It's been almost 2 months since the fixed income market was hit with the DHFL downgrade. While the company subsequently made good that payment, which it had originally missed on the 4th of June, liquidity problems persist, not just with DHFL, but with a raft of other entities in corporate India. Jet, Zee, Eveready, McLeod Russell, Cox & Kings, the list of stressed companies, rating downgrades and defaults has just become longer and longer in the last 2 months. Now, in this environment, should investors or how should investors really approach debt mutual funds? Is credit really a bad word? Are there any relatively safer funds that one can perhaps hide in and hopefully also earn better returns compared to a fixed deposit? Well, this is exactly the conversation that we take forward this week. And my guests on the show are Amit Tripathi, CIO of Fixed Income Investment at Reliance Nippon Life Asset Management, and Feroz Aziz, Deputy CEO at Anand Rathi Private Wealth. Thank you, gentlemen, so much for joining us on the show today. You know, I think it's still fairly jittery and scary ground for a lot of investors out there who've been just watching the headlines and watching the news. First things first, Amit, I can imagine it must have been many sleepless nights for fund managers, for your fraternity as well. Have things settled even somewhat?
So things have been settling from a market understanding perspective. I think markets know what to focus on right now, and there are very individual issues there rather than broader sectoral issues there right now, according to us. So markets know what to focus on. Markets are focusing on that. If I may use the term loosely, there is a market AQR happening with many companies right now. And that
AQR, simplify that for our viewers. Okay. Asset quality review. Really, we are understanding, the dynamics of asset quality when it comes to even the lending that mutual funds are doing. Yes, please.
Yes, mutual funds were always doing that to a certain extent. I think the granularity or the focus has increased even more now, and that's why things are a bit slow, so to say, on the investment side. Mm-hmm. But I guess the market has got this sorted out in terms of its understanding and where it is moving from here on. I think things are slowly normalizing. But it will take time in the sense that if we are going to talk about going back to a 2017 kind of an environment in terms of, lending or investments, etc., I think it will take time. Liquidity has its own way of seeping in. Bringing up appetite for good quality companies irrespective of ratings, and that will slowly start happening again over the next 3 to 6 months is what I gather.
Okay, well, we live on hope and we hope that things are going to turn better. Feroz, but I do want to sort of go back and just see what's happened in terms of real numbers, in terms of fund returns. I remember when we did the show, 2 months ago, we were talking about losses between, 10% and 50% on some of the funds, specifically the DHFL AMC funds, which had taken the maximum hit. Now, to what extent has there been recovery, if at all, in some of these names?
See, I think there has been, like you rightly said, Surabhi, there has been fall from 52% in the top 10 funds in terms of their fall and their impact. 52 to almost a 12% dip has been seen.
When you say top 10, you mean the top 10 funds with exposure to this entity?
Top 10 is counterintuitive. bottom 10 would be a right nomenclature to be used. The ones which have got the maximum impact have had 52% impact on the DHFL Pramerica medium term, and Tata medium term is 12%. And then you have the other 8 funds in the range from 52 to 12. So this is a very large impact, point one. Has there been some recovery? Yes, there has been some recovery. In a few funds, but is that worth speaking about? Not so much, for sure, because the maturities of the papers is what will actually bring back the written down value of the bond, right? Like, for example, if you look at a HSBC short duration fund, which I was tracking, incidentally, because one of the investors had invested, has a maturity on 18th of August. Okay. So that's when you exactly know whether the 75%, which has been marked down,
the haircut that was originally taken.
Correct. Mm-hmm. The haircut gets written back or gets written off the 25%.
We're just about 2 weeks away. So, but I don't want to sound sort of very pessimistic, but What are the options right now that people in these funds have? Because the so-called concept of side pocketing, which is basically an industry parlance of moving aside the hit assets or the toxic assets into a separate portfolio, so the rest of it is not sort of impacted. That side pocketing, I think we only saw with a Tata fund, right? Yeah. So what should investors be doing? 2 months later, they're still waiting.
Yeah, I think not side pocketing an asset which has actually been marked down is, I think, very detrimental to investors who stay back. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it's a double whammy. Mm-hmm. If you stayed back, you have the toxic asset with you. Mm-hmm. Second, whoever leaves the fund keeps increasing the extent as a percentage in the NAV of the toxic asset. Like a few funds which have a 52% drop, not that they had actually invested 52%. They would have invested 20% because a lot of people went out of the fund. As soon as the perception of the fund and the underlying bond deteriorates, people panic and exit. So those guys who actually waited for the long term had now 50% exposure. So side pocketing, I think, we've, as an industry, we've been very slow on something as logical as it could get, especially when there is precedence of it having been done in the past. I see no reason why these funds should only merge, because DHFL has merged a few funds with a credit risk fund. You would rather do side pocketing and make sure that the risk of that individual is given to that individual, or recovery of that individual is given to that individual who actually took the risk when it fructified. This kind of dichotomy leaves a very, very bad taste if industry doesn't progress on this faster.
Well, let me take, you know, the fund manager's view on this as well. Now, of course, Amit, great for you that I don't think any of the Reliance funds had too much of exposure to some of these, you know, major entities that have been hit in the past. But what are the learnings and the points that Feroz is raising, this concept of side pocketing that's not really happened? So today, if an investor is still waiting, still looking at a 12-13% NAV hit with no recovery immediately in the last 2 months, what should he or she do?
So just for the record purposes, the industry follows a very regimented kind of markdown whenever these events happen. And I can only tell you that the markdowns are significant in the context of the holding, and significant as compared to any other industry recognizing these type of stresses. So, for example, as a ballpark number, in DHFL's case, the markdown would have been at least 75% across funds, which essentially means that the downside risk from here on for any investor is limited in a very generalistic sense. I'm not talking DHFL name specifically. I'm just talking from a generalistic perspective. Let me come to the learnings part, because that is more important here. And I think there are two or three key learnings. One is that both from a portfolio manager perspective and from an investor perspective, it is the ultimately the quality of the company, and rating is just one of the manifestations of quality. There are hundreds of other aspects that portfolio managers do look at and need to further look at going forward whenever they are doing investments. And you have to be true to label, not only in terms of you know, the on the face of it, so to say, but also in spirit. Because a lot of these issues have cropped up in the so-called high-grade names, the names that were AAA and AA plus to start with. So essentially, you have to be true to label, not only in terms of saying that, you know, I just looked at the rating and I invested. A lot of fund houses put serious amount of effort and energy into getting the getting it right, irrespective of the ratings. And I think we would be one of the few people who would be doing that today. But the broader message is that you have to keep on doing it more and more so that you get it right, not only in letter, but more importantly in spirit. So that's one learning. The second learning is that there is absolutely no substitute for diversification in a portfolio, especially as you get into portfolios which are essentially so-called credit risk funds or accrual funds, or whichever name you call it, or even for general funds. So I guess going forward, I think all of us as portfolio managers would actually, irrespective of how much effort we've put in finding out good investee companies, still want to diversify much more than what we have done in the past. So that if there is this issue, it comes up ever in future, the relative impact on the portfolio is lesser.
Feroz, one of the biggest driving factors that makes people think of debt mutual funds is the fact that they're very tax efficient, especially if you're staying for three years, unlike your, you know, regular fixed deposit or, you know, any other investment, you will get very, very good returns. So the question is, now how do you approach this universe? First of all, let's talk accrual funds, credit funds. Are they a bad word? Should you still look at them? How do you start approaching this universe?
I think credit risk fund is the best word in the debt fund industry.
Okay?
Very counterintuitive, because most people don't know what they need. They know what they want. An advisor can take a simpler path of just seeing, giving a person what he loves to hear and buy. But you have to go with finance rather than sales and marketing. So, and I'll substantiate my point. Point one, you cannot live without debt funds. Why? Because you are one of the economies which has the highest real interest rates. How can you let go of such a good gift, right? If you were in Europe and half the Europe is negative interest rate, and here you have 7, 8, 9% net YTMs, you can't write that asset class off because of your mistakes. Point one. Point two, credit risk funds are very good. In fact, for the last 6, 7 years, at least at Anand Rathi, we've been only recommending credit risk funds. Why? Because of 3, 4 very, very important points, which only you'll have to take a magnifying glass to appreciate those points. If you went by perception, of course, people would want a AAA rated FMP or a short duration fund with very, very good ratings. Point one is that you get a higher net YTM. For example, if you have 9, 9.5% as your interest, and a AAA is at 7, you already every year have a buffer to go wrong of 2.5%. So you have credit risk funds, the worst 3-year credit risk funds are at 7%. What does this mean? It means that in 3 years you get 10-12% to lose. Even if you did, of course newspaper headlines would read that you lost, but in credit risk fund, the diversification, you can't have English words in the business of managing money. So diversification, by which I mean, if you buy 8 funds, you at least need to have 150, 200 bonds in your portfolio.
So, okay, 8 funds. Is that what you're suggesting, that if someone's looking at accrual, then you should have a basket of at least 8 funds, 8 different funds?
Absolutely. If you see equity funds, now people write in to your channel as well, you see fund investors having invested in 25 equity funds sometimes. But in debt funds, you will see 3 of them, right? The age-old saying, all eggs not in one basket, is the most relevant from a debt standpoint. And there are some credit risk funds which take collateral. A AAA rated company is never going to give you collateral. Okay, people in the market, in the investor fraternity will always say, I want AAA. But they would not even know which are the 5, 6, 7 rating agencies. But they want AAA. They will never ask you AAA by who. India has 10 times, 20 times more AAA rated companies than the US. Okay, generosity has been very, very high on the rating side. So you will have to not go by perceptions, you have to go by reality. So for example, if I give you in a nutshell, buy 8 funds, you will have 170 bonds. You will have per bond 0.75. Your net YTM will be 9%. And you will also have some portion of your portfolio collateralized. Like ILFS, there are some portion of ILFS which is returning money because there were SPVs created, right? The ones which were just unsecured debt, but was only going through the hierarchy of liquidation might or might not get the money. And if I have to throw some names in terms of exposures, Franklin Templeton Credit Risk Fund, you have ICICI Credit Risk Fund, Reliance Credit Risk Fund, Birla Credit Risk Fund. So if you took all these credit risk funds, I think the fund manager's homework in a credit risk fund is far, far more than a AAA rated fund. I have seen fund managers throwing up a AAA rated portfolio within half an hour. Right. So in credit risk, it'll take 6 months to a year for a fund manager to build up.
Got your point. And you've got some names that, you know, Feroz is still willing to back in terms of the credit category. Before we take a break, the concept of return, Amit, it's best to ask you this, right? You're the boss who's managing the money. If someone is getting into a credit risk fund with this kind of diversification, what should be a realistic return expectation? Because what we also saw, not necessarily in credit funds, but in some of the fixed maturity plans, at times even your principal can be at risk. So what should be the realistic risk return sort of equation that an investor must keep in mind?
So I'll stick to credit risk funds here for an answer.
Yes.
That's easier. So if I were to just take data from, say, the last 5, 6, 7 years, on a 1 year and a 3 year rolling basis, and I'm talking median, I'm not talking average, because average can be misleading sometimes, the median returns are around 2.5% higher than what you would get in a liquid fund.
Let me ask Amit, is that what you're penciling in as well? And then what does that mean for the duration portfolio? Basically, these are funds that get impacted because of the direction of interest rates.
So we are penciling in additional 25 very near term. And then the possibilities of further rate cuts will arise depending on how the growth equation pans out. Mm-hmm. If I may just use 1 minute here to say that this is the first time that we as financial investors in India are looking at interest rates in the context of growth. In the last 20 years, we have always looked at interest rates in the context of inflation.
Yeah,
so that's an equation that we have never solved for in the past. So I guess we have to wait out a bit to see if more rate cuts would be required. But I guess much more important than rate cuts is going to be the liquidity equation. Yeah.
So simple equation. I mean, if you're new to the world of fixed income or debt, the moment yields fall, bond prices rise. It's always an inverse correlation. And if yields are falling because rates are falling, then typically you should get some gain in those prices. So follow-up question on this is that if this is the simple equation that you want to play, then what kind of funds should one be in?
Very important to understand that debt funds give you a combination of two returns. One is the accrual in your portfolio, and mm-hmm. second is the capital gain / capital loss in your portfolio, which mm-hmm. adjusts accordingly, right? Typically, over long periods of time, and here I can take 3 years as an example, typically over long periods of time, accrual tends to significantly take over vis-a-vis capital gains, which is a bigger driver in the short run.
Okay.
You are investing for 6 months, capital gains can be a large part of your total returns. You are investing for 3 years, the impact of capital gains or capital losses for that matter reduces significantly. Mm-hmm. In that context, look at three broader categories today. Gilt funds today will have an accrual of below 7%.
Okay.
Short-term bond funds, which are typically AAA oriented or predominantly high grade, would have a carry of around 8%. Credit risk funds today would have a carry of close to 11%.
Okay.
So if you are investing for
and
3 years...
And when you say carry, again, just to simplify that...
Carry is interest rates or
yes.
yield on the fund.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if you are looking at a 3 year time horizon and you are talking about markets going down in terms of yields on the 10 year paper
mm-hmm.
By say 50 odd basis points in the first year itself,
mm-hmm.
In the first year you actually make something like 2% additional returns because of capital gains.
Sure.
You add it to your total return, so your first year returns will be 9% instead of 7%, which is the interest rate. But go to year number 2 and 3, if that capital gain is absent, your portfolio is now yielding 6.5 because you have already taken 50 basis points upfront.
The rate cut, yeah.
You're actually talking about, you will use efficiency in your portfolio to say still generate 7%, 7.5%.
Okay.
But effectively over a 3 year period, mm-hmm. this capital gain will get evened out in form of 50 to 75 basis points instead of 2%,
okay,
which you got in year one. Compare that with a short-term bond fund, and let's assume for the sake of simplicity that 90% of returns are coming just from carry. So it's an 8% carry. You get 25, 30 basis points of appreciation or efficiencies that the portfolio manager can bring out. So 8.25 kind of a return range. I'm purely talking theoretical here.
Okay.
And a credit risk fund, assuming you are not getting too many credit events going forward, the carry is much higher as of today to compensate for any kind of lack of capital gains that you make in that portfolio vis-a-vis these two portfolios. So these are the three broader yield categories that you have today. Take your pick with what you are happy with.
Okay.
Not saying that you should not invest in duration funds because a lot of people underappreciate the fact that, and I'll take the last 6-7 years again, average return of gilt funds, and I've looked at my gilt fund here, sorry, just for the sake of comparison, has been close to 9%. This has happened through an environment where a repo rate has been as high as 8% and as low as where we are today. So people underappreciate the fact that these funds also change their duration according to market environment. So you preserve a lot of returns when rates are going up. You make a lot of returns when rates are going down. That's an actively managed portfolio.
So right now, if you were to invest
in a basket of
debt funds, where would you put that money?
So I would say if I were to just simply put it in terms of weightage, let me put it in terms of weightage, I think I would put at least 60 odd percent into products which will give me higher carry.
Okay.
And depending on what you are comfortable with, whether a predominantly high-grade portfolio or a high-yield portfolio, take your pick. Mm-hmm. It has to be a 2 to 3 year duration. Portfolio focused more on carry today is what I would say, at least 60%.
On the accrual side?
On the accrual side. 40% you keep on duration because, like I said in the beginning, we are struggling in terms of finding solutions to what kind of rate cuts or liquidity is required.
Mm-hmm. So there will be some capital gain perhaps over there as well.
There could be some more capital gain than what we are looking at right now.
Okay, so 60% on accrual, 40% on duration with a view on the short term. All right, now Feroz, that was a lot of the theory. Practically, what kind of funds would you recommend at the moment and the mix between these two?
I think duration is a no-no. Because it turns out to be a zero-sum game, in my opinion. Data says so, for a three-year investor. Now, if I put some numbers, like Amit said, that interest rates going down will give you the capital appreciation. But if you look at a GSEC fund, the carry is 5.8 or the yield is 5.8. So you need to see GSEC at 3.8 from 6.3 after 3 years to make a double-digit return. If I'm going to take chances in my debt side, which is for stability, not for return, like you said that returns to be generated by equity, it's for stability. So it becomes counterintuitive to track a new variable. And secondly, very, very importantly, if you're an HNI as a viewer, for you, I think GSEC is an obsolete category. Why is it an obsolete category? Because 3-4 years back, interest rate futures were started. Okay, that's a complete ballgame, different ballgame altogether. So you buy a carry fund, like Amit said, 10-11%. If you want to take short-term calls on your interest rates going down, you use the interest rate futures market.
Okay, so you can use that instrument to get that capital gain if you, you believe that
you wish to. Because if you do it through a debt fund, you lose all the gain in taxation itself. Otherwise, you have to hold it for 3 years. So you go to get a gain and taxation takes away whatever you got, even if you won.
Okay, so you will retain your call with the accrual funds, a couple of names that you gave us.
Fact,
those would be your recommendations?
All eight funds you should ideally buy. Four we've mentioned, a few more you should. You can make a choice. Of course, you can look at money and take other schemes, but have 7-8 credit risk funds. So you can't just take it in isolation that credit risk funds are good. Credit risk funds are good provided you have the bandwidth to buy 8 different funds.
Okay, well, gentlemen, these are some very important discussion points that we've touched upon. Thank you very much. I think some more insights into this very interesting world of fixed income funds. Thank you, Feroz, and thank you, Amit, for joining us and enlightening our viewers on the show as well. That's it on this week's podcast. You can catch the show at 6:30 p.m. on Tuesdays with repeats on Saturday and Sunday mornings only on CNBC TV 18. You can also find us on the CNBC TV 18 YouTube channel. Do send your feedback, comments, queries. Catch me on Twitter. My handle is at Surabhi Upadhyay. That's S-U-R-A-B-H-I-U-P-A-D-H-Y-A-Y. Don't forget to add the hashtag money. Catch you next week.